Now, here is the Mole's Tom Becker with a well-read red. Is a better world possible?
Thank you, Lori. A better world is possible. Is this progressive mantra merely wishful thinking, or the bold assertion of a progressive movement that is backed by a feasible strategy and praxis? Walden Bellow, a Foreign Policy and Focus columnist, thinks the latter. Today I'm reading his recent article, It's Not Only Necessary to Develop an Alternative to Globalization, It's Entirely Possible. Free trade and the freedom of capital to move across borders have been the cutting edge of globalization. They've also led to the series of crises that have led to the widespread questioning of capitalism as a way of organizing economic life and of its paramount ideological expression, neoliberalism. The protests against capitalism in the G20 meetings in Hamburg may seem superficially the same as those which marked similar meetings in the early 2000s, but there's one big difference now. Global capitalism is in a period of long-term stagnation following the global financial crisis. The new protests represent a far broader disenchantment with capitalism than the protests of the 2000s. Yet capitalism's resilience amidst crisis must not be underestimated. For trade activists in particular, who've been on the forefront of the struggle against neoliberalism and globalization over the last two decades, there are a number of key challenges posed by the conjuncture. First is the surprising strength of neoliberalism. The credibility of neoliberalism, to which free trade ideology is central, has been deeply damaged by a succession of events over the last two decades, among which were the collapse of the third ministerial of the World Trade Organization in Seattle in 1999, the Asian financial crisis in 1997-98, and the global financial crisis of 2008-2009, the effects of which continue to drag down the global economy. What one finds puzzling is, despite the loss of credibility, neoliberalism continues to rule. Academic economists continue to teach it, and technocrats continue to prescribe it. The takeaway from this is that so long as there are interests that are served by an ideology, such as corporate interests and knowledge institutions that have invested in it, even a series of devastating crises of credibility isn't enough to overthrow a paradigm. The second challenge is especially relevant to developing countries, is the persistence of the model of export-oriented growth. Now, this model of development through trade is shared both by neoliberals and non-neoliberals, the difference being that the former think it should be advanced by market forces alone, and the latter with the vigorous help of the state. Now, over the last few years, the stagnation of the once dynamic centers of the global demand, the U.S., Europe, and BRICS, has made this model obsolete. It was, in fact, the non-viability of this once successful model of rapid growth in current global circumstances that pushed China in the early years of this century to push the country away from an export-oriented path to a domestic demand-led strategy via a massive $585 billion stimulus program. They failed, and the reason for their failure is instructive. In fact, a set of powerful interests had congealed around the export-oriented model. The state banks, regional and local governments that have benefited from the strategy, export-oriented state enterprises, foreign investors, and these prevented the model from being dislodged, even given its unsuitability in this period of global stagnation. A third challenge has to do with the fact that when the major changes in trade policy do take place, it's not because of the actions of progressive groups, but of demagogues of the right. This is clearest in the case of the United States. It was Donald Trump who shot down the Trans-Pacific Partnership that had been the object of so much criticism coming from the left. Trump may be a demagogue, and his motives may be opportunistic, but it was he who came through as one of the central demands of U.S. labor, not the Democrats, with the consequence that he's been able to win over large parts of white working class. In Europe, working classes are moving to right-wing parties in significant numbers as well, not only to a racist response to immigration, but also because these far-right parties are espousing anti-globalization and anti-free trade rhetoric. As in the case with the Democrats in the U.S., the Social Democrats in Europe are identified with financialization and free trade, and this is a central reason for their loss of credibility. But it was the non-establishment left, the left of social movements, that began and developed their critique of globalization, neoliberalism, and free trade in the 1990s and the 2000s. But for a variety of reasons, we weren't able to translate our politics into an effective movement. The extreme right, on the other hand, opportunistically exploited our message, rebranded themselves as anti-neoliberals, opposed to the center-right as well as the center-left, and now they're eating our lunch. The final challenge has to do with coming up with credible alternative paradigm. My first 2 points stress the importance of powerful interest in sustaining a paradigm despite its loss of intellectual credibility. But this isn't sufficient to explain the continuing powerful influence of neoliberalism. Our failure to move from a critique of neoliberal capitalism to a powerful alternative model like socialism provided to so many marginalized classes, peoples, and nations in the 20th century is part of the problem. The theoretical building blocks of an alternative economic model are there, the product of the work of so many progressives over the last 50 years. This includes the rich work that has been done around sustainable development, degrowth, and deglobalization. The task is to integrate them not only into an intellectually coherent model, but into an inspiring narrative that combines vision, theory, program, and action, and one that rests firmly on the values of justice, equity, and environmental sustainability. Of course, the work towards this goal will be long and hard, but we must not only be convinced that it is necessary, but also confident that it is possible to come up with an alternative that will rally most of the people behind us. Ideas matter. These are some of the central challenges confronting trade activists. We cannot leave the field to neoliberalism that has failed or to an extremism that has appropriated some of our analysis and married them to hideous reactionary values. A progressive future is not guaranteed. We must work to bring it about. That was an article entitled, "It's Not Only Necessary to Develop an Alternative to Globalization, It's Entirely Possible," by Walden Bellow for Foreign Policy in Focus.